Back in the 1990s, Monica Seles was the most dominant female tennis player the sport had ever seen, who changed the image of the women's game with her powerful strokes and, yes, her grunts.
We asked her about both when she joined us in 2009, along with Kiri, Tom, and Roy.
I wanted to talk about your book, of course. It's your memoir, Getting a Grip. And one of the things you talk about in your book is, of course, the fact that you were one of the youngest champions in the international tennis scene. And that's because, of course, you started very young. You started playing tennis when you were 6, 7 years old, that, even younger.
Yes, that's when I first picked up a tennis racket.
Right.
And I realized at age 12 that I was really good, and I was beating girls who were like 18 years old. And that's when I moved to the U.S. and really took up tennis full-time. And I turned professional when I was 15 years old.
Right. But how did you know, or how did your father, who was your coach, know how good you were? I mean, was it obvious in the beginning? Were you, like, punching balls through walls?
I wish, Peter. No, I think I just had a natural talent, and my father was a fantastic tennis coach. He taught me some great fundamentals. And, you know, I was a hard worker, so it was a combination of a lot of things. And then at that age, I just realized that, boy, I'm pretty good at this, and this could make, you know, this could be my career one day.
You were an international sports star. I mean, you were incredibly famous. Was that hard when you were that young?
Well, it was just difficult to live in the spotlight. You know, I was 15 years old and I won my first professional tournament. I was number one in the entire world at age 17. So a lot of pressure comes with that. And, you know, people start right away commenting on if I cut my hair too short, if I gained a few pounds, they commented right about that. So it was, you know, the learning process growing up under the microscope of the media.
Your book has extraordinary stories of what you went through, your career, which had some remarkable ups and some remarkable downs and some remarkable struggles, but it doesn't have a lot of gossip. And frankly, I would like you to give us some now.
Oh,
I mean, because come on, beautiful people.
I don't like the gossip around.
I believe that the International Tennis Tour is just an absolute cauldron of intrigue, sex, betrayal, and I you don't have to give me any specifics, but just tell me that I'm right.
I don't think so. I can't give you that satisfaction.
No, really?
As any job, it's a lot less glamorous from the inside than from the outside. I will tell you that, though.
I'll trade you some NPR gossip.
Yeah. Now, I wanted to mention one other thing. You mentioned this in passing in your book. Another thing that you were known for at the height of your playing days was, to put it bluntly, your grunting.
Yes, I know. And I wish I could get credit for it, but unfortunately, Jimmy Connors started it, and he grunted before I was even born. But
right.
I think
you did not invent the grunt. But people talk. I mean, is that something you tried to do, or were you?
Not at all. I've grunted since I was like 8, 9 years old,
yeah.
And I didn't even notice that I was doing it. And I think it was just unusual for people to see a female hit the ball so hard and really give it all into every single point.
Right. Do you ever grunt off the court?
I never noticed even a tennis match. You know, I still get it sometimes. People say, oh, can you grunt for me? And I'm like, I can't. This is just something I do when I hit the tennis ball. It's part of who I am. It's my trademark.
But you don't do it when you're trying to open a really stuck jar, for example. Do you ever play Wii tennis?
No, I've never played Wii tennis at all.
Really?
I mean, I really don't believe it. I like to play actual real tennis the same way that I love to eat real food. You know, I don't believe in diet.
Right. Well, Monica Seles, we are delighted to have you with us, but we're not done with you yet. We've invited you here. We've invited you here for a game we're calling.
I'm sorry. I can't talk right now. I'm chewing my beer.
This year marks the 250th anniversary of the Guinness Brewing Company of Ireland, that wonderful maker of beer. And of course,
I'm in trouble. I can tell right now.
It's a key contributor, Guinness is, to the great Irish legend of amusing, poetic, rampant alcoholism. So we're going to ask you 3 questions about Guinness, its history. Get 2 right, you'll win our prize for one of our listeners, Carl, singing Danny Boy, off key, on one of their home answering machines. Carl, who is tennis legend Monica Seles playing for?
Monica is playing for Lynn Pham of Beaverton, Oregon.
Ready to play?
Hi, Lynn.
There you are.
Yes,
okay,
I am.
Here we go. First question. In addition to a good recipe for beer, Arthur Guinness, who founded the company back in the 18th century, he had a fine instinct for business, as evidenced by what? A, he first legally changed his name from Arthur Flatts because he knew Flatts beer would not sell. B, instead of building a new brewery, he simply leased an old one for 9,000 years. Or C, he created a cheap disposable keg which the purchaser could discard. Essentially, he invented the first beer can.
I know nothing about beer since I don't drink beer, but I'll go with A.
You're going to go with A. He changed his name from Arthur Flatts, realizing that wouldn't sound good.
Mm-hmm.
No, it was actually B. He leased the brewery for 9,000 years. Ooh. The St. James Gate Brewery has been leased by the Guinness Company since it was founded 250 years ago, and that means that in the entire 2.5 centuries of existence, the company has spent about $16,000-$17,000 on rent.
Hmm. Sorry, Lance.
No, you still got two more chances. Are you going to give up? Come on. This is three sets. You're down one set. Come on.
There are two more to go.
I just want to say this, and I mean it in the best way. Try grunting.
Uh-huh. Oh, give it
could
a
help.
Toss.
Just a little intense here. In some places, Guinness is known for the Guinness Book of World Records as much as it is for their beer. How did the brewery get into the record book business? Was it A, it all started just as bits of trivia they came up with to print on beer coasters, beer mats? B, the head of Guinness created the book to settle a bet about which game bird was the fastest in the world? Or C, it was inspired by an old joke, when you're drunk on Guinness, you're the drunkest man in the world.
To go with C.
You're going to go with C?
It just sounds too good to pass up.
It really is pretty good. You're going to go with that?
Yes.
No, it was B, sadly, the bet. In 1951, the managing director of Guinness was hunting in North Slob, Ireland. And he started to wonder what the fastest game bird was, and he realized there was no handy reference to figure that out, and then he said, gee, if there was one, I bet we could sell a lot of them. So they invented the book. All right, last question. You can pick this up. You can pick this last one up. Last question. The ingredients of Guinness are a closely held secret by the company, but we know one ingredient that might be the key to the black stuff's success. What is it? Is it A, fish bladders? Mm. Is it B, anthracite coal? Mm. Or is it C, hemp?
Mm.
C.
You're going to go for hemp. It would make sense, I guess, but the answer is fish bladders.
Oh. Wow.
Yeah, no, like many other British beers, you see, Guinness is filtered with a substance called isinglass that's made from fish bladders.
Oh.
The stuff is supposed to be removed in the brewing process, but vegetarians, anyway, believe that there are molecular traces of fish bladders in your brew.
Ooh.
Carl, how did Monica do in our quiz?
A rarity, Peter. Monica did not win this when she went down 3-love. So no prize for Lin Pham.
Monica Seles is a world champion tennis player, the winner of 9 Grand Slam singles titles. She was elected to the Tennis Hall of Fame. Her new book, Getting a Grip, is out now. Monica Seles, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you. Thank you.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye-bye. That's it for our radio version of Gym Class. Feel free to change out of your sweats and back into your street clothes. Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and the Kauffman Foundation, working to advance innovations in education and entrepreneurial success. Learn more at kauffman.org. The William T. Grant Foundation, supporting research to improve the lives of young people, online at wtgrantfoundation.org. And the Doris Duke Charitable Foundation, supporting the performing arts, environmental conservation, medical research, and the prevention of child abuse. Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is a production of NPR and WBEZ Chicago, in association with Urgent Haircut Productions. Doug Berman, executive producer. Philip Goedeker writes our limericks. Our house manager is Don Hall. Our web guru is Beth Novi. Engineers include Les Dolarczyk and Mohammed Mao. Thanks to John Zajac at Chase Bank. B.J. Liederman composed our theme. Our program is produced by Ian Chillog, Eva Walterover, and Emily Acton. Technical direction is from Robert Newhouse and Lorna White. The senior producer of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is Mike Danforth. Thanks to Carl Castle. Thanks to all of our panelists and great guests. And thanks to all of you for listening. I am Peter Sagal. We will see you next week. This is NPR.